to the Soul Body Horse podcast, where we dive deep into the horse-human connection. Here, we believe in the power of stories, in digging deeper, pushing further, and asking the oft unsaid question. I'm your host, Meredith Crawford. Today, we have a very special guest, Wendy Walker, who is joining us from her lovely home in Napa. Wendy is an animal Reiki practitioner and teacher. She is a rewards-based horse trainer and the 2023 Teacher of Excellence in the Animal Reiki Source Let Animals Lead method. Additionally, she has a background in body work and gymnastic exercise for horse rehabilitation. She has also worked with traumatized, hospitalized elephants in Thailand. Thanks so much for joining us today, Wendy.
Meredith, it is an honor to be here. I'm so inspired by your journey with Gomez and how you stuck with him after his gelding surgery. You let go of your ego, dug deep to support him. You stayed fully present for him. And that's what he needed.
Thank you. Now, to kick things off, for the listeners who aren't familiar with Reiki, can you explain what that modality is?
Sure. It looks a lot like meditation. So you might sit on the outside of an enclosure and start meditating and breathing, and it's called the breath of light that we start out with. And then there'll be a little bit of some visualizing to get yourself really grounded and centered. And that's what it looks like from the outside. Essentially energy work, and it's consensual. As we're talking, I'll just keep telling you of examples of little stories of things that have happened.
Correct me if I'm wrong. The Reiki that you do is a little bit more meditation based and less hands-on.
Right. A lot of times people expect to need to learn a series of hand positions, which for self-healing Reiki is absolutely appropriate. Or if you're working with a human, you know, the human phoned up and made an appointment. And so that's between two humans who can talk to each other. With animals, we want to present it in a much different way. A lot of times they come over and will tickle you or sit in your lap or take a nap nearby. So we don't ever force it. Like if I'm going to do a session with a horse, I don't get the horse out of his stall and put him in the cross ties. You know, that would be the antithesis of how to do Reiki, how to be Reiki with horses. So usually start out on the outside of the enclosure with breathing and grounding. And then at some point they may come over and nuzzle you or not. So it's not necessarily a hands-on practice.
How did you get started with this modality?
My horse Brioso. I so appreciate that in your podcast, because I've been listening to a few of them, you're telling the stories of horses who have taught their humans to see beyond using the horse's body for all the expected and fun disciplines that are out there. And then as humans, we can get so goal-oriented and focused on achieving things with our horse. It's healthy to work hard and be proud. You've grown as a team with your horse partner, but we need to check in and see how the horse is feeling about things. And if the human doesn't know how to read the horse's emotions and how their body is feeling, things can get tangled really quickly and the plan falls to pieces. I got started because of the horses that I had in my life, my own horses. Mustang Yogi was my first horse teacher as an adult. And it was as if just the right helper would come into my life when I needed that help. My next horse teacher, Brioso, and he's the one that propelled me to signing up for Kathleen Prasad's Reiki classes. I have to start with Yogi because Yogi sort of made me who I am, and he also helped Brioso so much. So it's like we're this big family. So Yogi taught me about horses, and I taught him about how to get along in this world with humans. So after I adopted him as a three-year-old, wild from the BLM, I was brainstorming a name for him, and I heard him tell me his name was Yogi. He spoke right into my head, and I knew that name didn't come from my head. It wasn't on the piece of paper I was brainstorming. And he actually said, "You can call me whatever you'd like, but my name is Yogi." And so I was like, well, I guess that's his name. Another time before he was actually a riding horse, we were hiking along at Skyline Park in Napa, and a mountain biker came like sailing over this ridge towards us, and he took off and the rope smoked through my hands. And luckily I was wearing gloves, When I got him stopped, I just spoke to him in words and I said, "You're with me now and I'm going to keep you safe." And it's pretty much like from those kinds of moments on, we've always had this conversation. And he's the one who told me, "I'm really worried about Brioso." We eventually earned the dressage bronze medal together. And I wanted to let him retire and start a young horse for dressage and trail riding. And that's why I went off looking for Brioso. Our first animal Reiki guiding principle is, I believe animals are equal partners in the healing process. The way animals deeply see into each human, our energy, our intent, taught me about that reciprocal nature, the give and take of animals being equal partners. So that code of ethics, I was living it before I learned it. And then when I found this animal Reiki source method, I was like, whoa, I'm already doing that. The code of ethics has become part of how I am with animals. And it's opened up a two-way communication using the language of energy. And animal communication and Reiki are definitely separate modalities. And I'm not an animal communicator for other people. I actually have an animal communicator, but I can hear it sometimes. And so it's just a different modality. In 2015, I bought a black PRE Andalusian yearling named Brioso to eventually take over for Yogi when Yogi would retire. And as a 2 and 3 year old, he'd open his mouth in like a silent scream. And he would do this for what I wouldn't think there was any reason for him to be upset or in pain. So I worked with my vet and a craniosacral practitioner along with acupressure and T-touch that helped him a little bit, but he couldn't tolerate massage. He would leave the barn, literally, like you couldn't wrestle him to stay in there to get that kind of treatment. He had severe growing pains and teething and anxiety and equine IBS, which is quite a mess. Sensitivity to wind, sensitivity to changes in the weather. But the vets couldn't figure out what was wrong with him. Saw this flyer for heard Reiki classes. I thought, well, it can't hurt. And I went on a weekend. I had been working at the time and I was teaching public high school at the time. So I went on the weekend and I was really tired. I just figured, well, it can't hurt. And I kind of thought it was a little bit silly, but now I don't. Learning to practice Reiki with Brioso changed everything. Brioso brought me to learning this method and was life enhancing for both of us. I thought I was going to learn it to help him. It weaves into every part of my life at this point.
Wow.
Yeah, I thought he needed to be healed because, you know, the vets were stumped by his case. But it was honestly my anxiety about his health challenges that needed the overhaul. Degenerative suspensory ligament desmitis, DSLD, or hypermobility. So I figured that out in his 3rd to 4th year of life. And I actually, at that point, started grieving for my dreams with him right then and there. But daily Reiki practice with him helped us both get through it. And he thrived. He thrived until 2022. I just never made him into a riding horse. I'd ridden him a few times and that's when I called the vet and I was like, okay, something's really wrong. You know, he just didn't feel right. He felt like riding a big squishy waterbed. His body could not hold a rider. He could hardly hold himself, much less a rider. So yeah, I gave up on that.
And when you started with Reiki that weekend, did everything change for you? You guys instantaneously?
Sure. I walked in there thinking I've got an open mind, but this is probably just a bunch of hooey. And one of the things that Kathleen says, Kathleen Prasad is the founder. She says, she's my mentor. She just says, just practice a little bit each day. Start with 10 minutes and just see what happens. Just stay open. And that's what I did. I thought, all right, I'll do it. That's what I'm supposed to do. I'll go through these motions. It's a great system because you don't have to sit down and light 18 organic sticks of of incense. You don't have to, you know, be wearing your best yoga pants in order to do it. You can practice this breathing and this visualizing while you're scrubbing a bucket or while you're picking manure. It's almost like you can make this into a walking or moving meditation because for most of us sitting still, especially when we're sitting in our barn aisle, looking at things that need to be swept up, it's hard to actually meditate. You do not beam your energy on the part of the animal that's sick. And that's one of the things that probably I had to learn because, you know, I knew that there were parts of him that were very sore. And it was really hard to look with, you know, Sally Swift, soft eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So in Reiki, we call it seeing with our Reiki eyes. And one thing that I guess the animal Reiki code of ethics is that Reiki supports all healing, not just that physical thing that you have in your mind. And we may not recognize that transformation until it's behind us. We have to kind of let go and trust. Can't force any outcome. We can't beam our energy at a problem. He had anxiety, body-wide pain. I had anxiety about his anxiety. So what a mess, right? Changing my energy supported him in becoming a Reiki teacher for others wanting to learn. Believe it or not, he was my partner. Mm-hmm. Instead of training him up for dressage, I started my little animal Reiki practice with him. And Yogi supported him. He supported me. And then people who want to learn how to practice Reiki with their own animals can come and learn with us. And it is great to not practice with your own animals at first, because of course your anxiety is going to be much more high. And in the meanwhile, while all of this was going on and I started my business, I also thought, well, I have room in my heart for another horse. So our tarot came into my life. Our tarot was a buckskin Lusitano. I bought him at age 4, and he was going to take over the riding plans that fell through with Brioso. He had some issues, but nothing that could not be addressed through what I thought, you know, worming and nutrition and training.
With Brioso, did you see the changes in him from the Reiki?
Oh, yes.
Gradually, like, can you describe some of those changes?
Sure. At the time, I was boarding him for the winter at a place down in Sonoma, and the other people would go into the arena and ride. And they're riding and training their horses. And I'd go into the arena and stand in the middle and practice my Reiki. And he would just lay down and take a nap right there in the middle. And it wasn't that I laid him down or manipulated anything. What I did do is hold space for him, share space with him. And he would start out by biting me, chewing on me. He would fling his legs around. All his energy would be stirred up because of the other horses training in the arena. And pretty soon, though, he would let go of all of that buzzy energy and just calm down. And he would blink his eyes and sort of glaze over, looking like he was time traveling almost, is what he looked like. Mm-hmm. Then he would just go down and take a nap. And we call that taking a Reiki nap. And that's the ultimate. Like, if you're practicing meditation with an animal and they take a nap. Funny enough, during class that I did with Kathleen, I was absolutely horrified because I fell asleep during the meditation. There were several meditations throughout the day. And at some point during a meditation, I passed out. Everybody at the end of the meditation, you know, they woke up, or they came out of the meditation and everybody was starting to share how they felt and what they experienced during that guided meditation. And people were sharing, and I would wake up and I was like, I fell asleep in class. So during the break, I went up to Kathleen and said, oh, I'm really sorry, I fell asleep during class. And she said, oh no, with Reiki, we call that taking a Reiki nap. You must have really needed it. You must have needed the healing. And what a relief to not feel judged and to just feel fully supported.
So Arturo then was to take over your riding plans.
Yes, Arturo. And he was beautiful, just, you know, a beautiful buckskin. So gosh, you know, what's not to like? The price was right. So not long into our relationship, it was only here a few months when he kicked the stall divider and got his leg stuck. And the banging from down in the stable woke us up around 3 a.m. He ended up making a full recovery, but it took about a year.
And was a ligament?
He hung by his leg.
Okay.
Leg was up high and his body was down on the ground. So I thought he probably had a broken leg and would have to be put down. But the vet and my husband and I got him out. And the vet said, well, let's just keep an eye on him. And we checked him every 10 days. And when the swelling had gone down enough, we were able to do ultrasound and radiograph. And he didn't have anything broken. Thing was just okay. Every 30 days, let's reassess. So the hand walking started with 5 minutes a day, then 10 minutes a day, then 10 minutes twice a day. You know how that goes. And he was a very good patient. And in that amount of time, imagine the Reiki that I could practice with him during his healing. So for 9 months, I really had a strong Reiki practice, which rippled into every other part of my life too. That deep pastern bone bruising actually did heal. And one of the things I teach in my classes that seems so obvious and that humans overlook is that animals are equal partners in the healing process. And Artero wanted to heal. I was just the facilitator. I think it was probably like that with you and Gomez too. You were there, you were present, and he had to do the work. And I honestly had been willing to let him go. How could a horse live after experiencing this? Well, he lived and he got sound. And I learned a lot of different techniques and modalities with him. I worked with pretty much all the named people that you can think of in order to come up with an everyday, twice a day sometimes, list of stretches and exercises that we did together. From the beginning, though, he moved as if he had the handbrake on. Like he really tested my patience and he tested my creativity. And that's a little bit where the positive reinforcement clicker training came in, because he would not move forward. And so we, you know, played all kinds of games to get him moving forward.
What were some of the things that worked? What were some of the other things that didn't work with this horse?
Everything worked a little bit. Yeah, everything worked a little bit. I worked with Jenny Purcell and she made up some games for us to practice. And I learned Alexandra Kurland's six basic foundation positive reinforcement clicker games from her book.
Okay.
And right when the pandemic hit is when I was going to go to a clinic with Alex. And so that was canceled. But still, you know, I did consultations online and did all kinds of things so that his mind was, he had a very good mind and he loved to learn new things. So, you know, he had a little bit of Spanish walk. He could, I think it's called jambette, or rear straight up, curled up like this in perfect balance. He turned into an excellent Liberty horse. I just had all this time thought that his lack of forward was from things from his past. And he had tested low in selenium and he had a high worm burden when I got him. And both of those things are treatable. So I just wasn't that worried about it. And I thought all of the things going on with him were training issues. Like you with Gomez, I practically went to the ends of the earth to find answers. And the Dr. Sue Dyson course through Equitopia, along with Anna Blake's Affirmative Horsemanship and Calming Signals Clinic, that really honed my ability to read the horse's facial expressions in a different way. And I started to see that he was in pain. We had done shockwaved. We had done everything. And my vets all said that he shouldn't be in any pain from what's left over from the stall divider accident. He's checking out fine, Wendy. Get on and ride that horse. Go on down the trail. They almost said, stop calling us. Right? I just was thinking about how, as we honor the horse in the moment and we wait and we breathe, that relationship can blossom beyond our wildest dreams. And it did. It really did. And it didn't involve the kind of riding that I wanted to do at the time. So we did some trail riding and he tolerated it. Over time, though, we evaluated him. We ruled out EPM. We ruled out ECVM. We ruled out kissing spine. And I finally pulled a hair sample and tested him for PSSM 1 and 2. And he tested positive for PSSM 2. And what is two variants, one is called NP8, which is like MS in people, multiple sclerosis in people, and NPX, which is similar related to autism in humans. So some of his ways of being kind of really made sense at that point. And horses with muscle myopathies may come off as quirky, and we just write it off as quirky. Or they can look as if they have a training deficit. So all the trainers I had worked with kind of gave me a hard time and said I was too soft on him. And in reality, he didn't have a training problem. He had a body-wide muscle disease that made it so that he could not take the contact. He could not move forward in the way we would expect any young, healthy horse to move forward. So in the wrong hands, horses that won't be trained to ride are abused or they're sold on. And I stuck with him for 3 years. And, you know, he tolerated some riding, but when I found out what he had, it was last May, I retired him at age 7. And then we lost him in December. So it's been 3 really important horse teachers in my life have really taught me to listen. when we practice Reiki, we don't focus on what's wrong. And that's been really helpful. And I think I've been tested because there were some things wrong. So I'm pretty good at not focusing on what's wrong. I'm pretty good at seeing the animal as the bright light that they are. Yesterday, the saddle that I ordered for Arturo, it's a McCall Lady Wade. It arrived. I ordered that saddle over a year ago and it arrived yesterday and I cannot open that box yet. I'm thinking, okay, open the box and try the saddle on Picasso because maybe it'll fit Picasso. Picasso, my new horse.
With these experiences that you're having, Brioso, with Arturo, and even with Yogi, are you drawing any conclusions about what is the place of riding within the horse-human relationship?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Yes.
Can you share some of your thoughts?
Yogi loved going out on trail rides and he loved taking a new trail. So if I went out to Point Reyes and I was going to, in my mind, I'm planning to do the same loop that I like to do because I have a few favorite loops out there. He would kind of go, oh, okay, we're going this way. All right. He would go along with me. But if I turned him in a direction that we've never gone before, he turned on his little turbocharger behind. He loved going on trail rides. So when I think about Yogi, I say, sure, why not? Why not ride that horse? When it came to Arturo, I would take him out to Point Reyes. And I did do a few trips with him, but I really got the impression that he did it for me. He did it as a gift for me. He tolerated it, but he didn't love it. And I would talk to my friends about it and go, you know, he just doesn't love it. He doesn't really love the arena. He doesn't really love going on trail rides. And even when he's just standing there eating, he might get a nerve zinger and spook bolt and run down the hill as if he's going to run into a tree. So they're all different. I think it just depends. And that's probably why we have certain lines of horses that are being bred and bred and bred. And that's because those horses are rideable or have rideability or maybe don't put up too much of a fight when it comes to being ridden. Arturo went away to a well-known trainer for 3 months. And that trainer made me feel pretty bad about myself for him being shut down. And that wasn't the problem because I had been listening to Arturo. The problem was that he had a disease that made his body hurt. So riding was painful for him. Doing anything was actually, being a horse is painful for a horse. Just being a horse is painful for them.
Getting back to your comparison to MS, there are stories out there of people with MS who live with chronic pain. And it sounds like it's very much the same experience.
I think there's a lot more for us to learn about muscle myopathies with horses. We have a long way to go. So, but what we can do right now is we can take those classes, you know, the Sue Dyson class through Equitopia. Once everyone takes that class, they will not go to a show and see horses the same way. It's excruciating to see some of the things that we are seeing. People just don't see it. It's not their fault. I'm not going to judge them. They just don't know. I didn't know either. I showed Yogi in a double bridle all the way up to third level dressage and we qualified for musical freestyle. And so I've been there, I've done it. And I see some of the photos where his eye looks a little sad. And I thought, well, huh, I wonder why his eye looks a little sad. But I didn't think any more of it. But now I know a little bit better. And I think he was tolerating that for me because they'll do anything for us. And he's very happily retired now, I'll tell you. He was a great horse to bring Brioso along on. Brioso had been, before I found out what was going on with him, he had been trailered all over Point Reyes, trailered to on little field trips and ponied all over Point Reyes and gone camping with him. And he, you know, loved being part of the family.
Do you think that for many horses, riding has, or being ridden has the same importance to them as riding has to a lot of us humans?
Some horses' bodies are just not built to carry a rider. So it hurts them. We shouldn't be riding the ones that are saying no. But I'm also not saying that, oh, we have to have consent for everything. Because getting in the horse trailer to evacuate is a non-negotiable. Getting attention from the vet is something that every horse should feel good about. So we need to counter condition. If they're worried or scared, we need to slow everything down and take it one thing at a time. And make sure that the horse doesn't have any bad experiences early in their life when it comes to know, getting their feet trimmed, trailer and seeing the vet, things like that. Yeah, my new Andalusian, he's Andalusian, I think 69% and a little bit of Heinz 57 in there. He had a rough start in life and was thankfully rescued. And I've had him 8 months now, and he's around 5 or 6 years old, we think. And when he realized I was listening to him, he started to test me. He started to test me some. And he's like, do I really need to lead forward out of my stall today? Things like that. I could see he was checking to see if I was actually listening. And so I listened for a few days, like really listened and stopped and waited. He said, I don't want to go through the door now. And I stopped and waited. And then he was like, oh, she's really listening to me. Then I would pick up his feet and, you know, pick out his feet, and he would start to wrestle, swinging his legs around. And so I would move with him and not clamp down and brace up on his leg. And then he would just still his leg and relax. And I just think he was testing me. He's very smart. And we've had some bumps in the road to smooth out already. And early in the relationship, he decided not to load after a short field trip and the sun was going down and it was time to go down. It was time to go home. He ended up spending the night at the Napa Valley Horsemen's Association because pretty much he tried to exit all directions, including straight up. Some of his behavior was pretty scary. Like he tried to run over the top of me. And then at some point, an hour later or so, he just completely shut down. I saw him. I saw the knob on the energy just turn off. He just completely shut down. And I'm certain with force, I could have had a friend help me shove him into the trailer. And that was kind of one of those egoectomy moments we've all had, because I kind of think I'm pretty good at trailer loading and teaching horses that the trailer is where the alfalfa is. The trailer is a good thing. That was just one little bump in the road. And he and Yogi get along well, and we've been moving forward with the training. And now he trains like a pro. So, I mean, he trailer loads like no big deal now. And I think he was testing me, and I think we had a breakthrough. And that essentially I left him there overnight. I got him a pen and he spent the night. I had plenty of food, so it wasn't a big deal. And the next morning he loaded.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. And for the listeners, if you'd like to learn more about working with Wendy, you can visit her website, wendyandfriends.com. And that's spelled WendyandFriends.com. Or you can text her directly at 707-337-8599. For more information about our host, Meredith Crawford, and her healing services for horses and humans, visit her at thelab.horse. Thanks for listening.